Now, Gary came up with that title. That's a Latin word for horrible year. I'm not going to try to pronounce it because they say in my Jernigan-ism that wouldn't come out very well. But there's another word that I would use to talk about a little bit about, if we're going to talk about what happened this past year in the markets and cotton and commodity prices worldwide. Cotton has been hit by probably the only commodity in the world, maybe outside of oil, that's been hit by what I call two events. And it was a term that I became aware of last year that I like very well in describing this. If many of you have read anything I've written, I've probably overused the word, but it's called black swan. And it came about from Australia back in the 1790s. They were a naturalist who was studying the swans and found all of a sudden, instead of all the swans being white, one showed up as black. So it became known as the years passed on as a description of a highly improbable event happening. Well, late 2007, early 2008, it was made famous in a book called The Black Swan, and it was written by Nassan Taliban, if I think I pronounced that correctly. But anyway, it was a very excellent book. I happened to read that early in the first of the year, and it talked about how improbable events shaped history. Well, you know what happened in the first black swan event that hit the cotton market occurred in March of this year. And the gentleman just got the Cotton Market Award, one of the few people that have heard about it, that has a positive experience from that event where he got to hedge cotton in the close to 90 cents and sold new crop almost at a dollar. But that was a rarity. That black swan event was driven by several highly improbable events that all came together at the same time. Most of you are aware of the the rush of investment funds into the commodity complex and how negative that was. Well, that it wasn't altogether negative, and we'll talk about that in just a minute, but the driving forces there were, as we entered 2008, a record amount of money moved into the commodity complex. Actually, in the first quarter of the year, I think the amount of money invested in the global commodity complex, either through index funds, exchange-traded funds, or just in hedge funds and so forth, reached record amounts, and that began to drive prices higher. And far as cotton was concerned, it did not happen at the same time as very much demand. So as cotton, as prices begin to continue to rally into February of this past year, prices begin to move up and move up. At the same time, you might remember that Bear Stearns event kind of started this global calamity that we've been living through. Well, Bear Stearns went bankrupt in March, or late March, mid-March. So right as you get back into late February, the momentum was building about what was happening with Bear Stearns. There was a credit crisis brewing. And this led to the first time since 1979, it was the first time we've ever heard merchandisers talk about running out of credit lines. So at the same time, they had a record short position in New York, prices continue to rally, credit lines become constrained. At the same time, ICE, which we now have the term Intercontinental Exchange, took over the New York Board of Trade, decided to end pit trade at the end of February, decided to implement procedures that were very rough as far as are concerned in margins, rapidly raised margins faster than what would happen under the old NYBOC procedure. All the events that came together that forced the trade to liquidate short positions as the market rallied to over 90 cents in the futures and reached $1.10 in synthetic trade in the options. Well, as anything else, that captivated the top of the market. Since then, prices went back down as the trade were left with no hedges, very little demand. Demand began to weaken a little bit and so forth, and the market came down into the 60s and 70s. And then we had the second black swan event that hit the market. And that was the one that's still affecting us this day, which you've heard the economists talk about. And one way this is illustrated is Gary, who's our group's economist, came up with this chart on the VIC, which is a measurement of the volatility of the S&P 500 stock index and the stocks and options that make up that index. You can see that this index had a historical tendency to trade below 50 for the life of since it came into existence. Well, this year, as this last black swan event really began to unfold, it was the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers. And as we look back, at least my opinion would be that would be the one thing that the administration should be criticized the most about, that let that happen. Because when they let Lehman Brothers go bankrupt, it destroyed confidence across all global markets. It illustrated clearly how interconnected these firms were and how the ripples were felt in Hong Kong, the ripples were felt throughout Asia as the reach of these firms and so forth. So the VIC index is measured by this chart, shot up to over 70. to give you a little bit better, feel better about conditions today, it's back down to 40. So things are improving. At the same time this happened, as a part of this adventure, the energy prices, as you know, collapsed. Well, that had ramifications around the world. You know, to put it in perspective, I was in June the 1st, I was in a hedge fund conference in Singapore, and a gentleman that specializes in energy complex gave a speech, and his prediction was that energy prices, and this guy was a rocket scientist, it turned out, was predicting that that energy prices would reach top out at about $145 to $150 a barrel, fall to $50 a barrel, build a base for about 9 months, and then rally to $400 a barrel. Well, he's been pretty close so far, so I've got his number, and we'll try to invest with him myself, I think. But that gives you an illustration of one of the things the market's been through. And this has had ramifications, too, for cotton in our world, because polyester prices are down nearly 50% in China. And today, the Chinese mills, he's battling over what to do to make himself profitable. He looks at cotton's trading in Chinese terms at around 10,900 yuan a ton delivered to mill. Polyester's at 7,300 yuan a ton. Don't figure out much, you know, which one he should be using more of from a price standpoint. Another thing that illustrates what has happened in the global markets, to again give you a base of understanding, is what happened to freight rates. During the boom in commodity prices, when China was buying every commodity in the world and trade was booming and so forth, there's a measurement we use to do this called the Baltic Freight Dry Index. And that is the index of dry freight rates around the world. Well, the freight rates have collapsed. And talk about a bear market. There is a futures market on this index, traded on the Baltic Exchange in London. There's a very advanced derivative market on this index. And so that helped drive it as well. But this index is down 92% from its peak. I don't know of any market that's suffered that before. And there's actually instances where people now have been booking the ships free. If you just pay the maintenance on them, they'll let you use the ship. I mean, that's how bad it's become. And you saw this chart earlier. This was on the CRB index, which is the, now I think it's called the S&P CRB index, but we still call it the CRB, Commodity Research Bureau index. It's kind of like the Dow Jones of the commodity markets. In the height of the money flowing into the markets, peaked in the summer. In July, it actually peaked. You can see it's collapsed. Now, a little bit of good news for you on this is that in the period between Christmas and New Year's, the global commodity markets have begun to rally. And part of that is tied into energy has made a turn and rallied some. Second thing was that even just a small uptick in demand from China for iron oil is triggered through the markets. The Aussie dollar has rallied substantially against the U.S. dollar because of this. Aussie mining stocks have rallied sharply. All that's related to just a small improvement in demand from China for iron ore that says that basically maybe the Chinese government stimulus is beginning to work a little bit. So a lot of hope is contingent on that. So as we look to one of the how all this relates back to cotton is a little bit to talk, I guess, into China for a moment. Global cotton consumption is set to fall, the sharpest fall on record. Part of that a large portion of this is all related to China. If we were to be having this conversation in July of this year or June this year, I would have been found guilty of probably thinking consumption in China would reach 52, 53 million bales. Others were saying 55 million bales. Well, today we lowered our estimate for consumption in China to 40, a little over 45 million bales. Now, this is an earth-shattering event. And what it's all related back to is that over the past 3 to 4 years, when China's cotton consumption was booming and the rest of the world's consumption was booming, one of the things that was happening is, you know, it was profitable to spin cotton, so there was a rapid expansion in textile mill capacity. More spinning mills were being put in place than there was demand for. So as we looked into our crystal ball into the future, we had been expecting at some point in time there would be a rationalization of this excess capacity. But we thought it would happen over a several-year time, period where mills will close down and so forth. Well, it's all happened in about a six-month time that the great economic calamity has brought it all to the fore. So now as much as a third of Chinese mills in some places are not operating at all. They've gone bankrupt. Other ones have changed their whole mixture, their operating schedules and so forth. So we've had what would have normally we would have expected to happen in a several-year period has all happened in a six-month period. So it's all come home into China. So this led us to have right now our global consumption estimate is 111 million bales. That's substantially below where the USDA has it. And that's based on our Chinese. We have a joint venture in China. and is part of the China Reserve Corp called the China Cotton Marketing Monitoring Service. They lowered their own estimate of consumption down to a little bit below 10 million tons. That was down 1.7 million tons. So these are pretty dramatic things that none of us have ever seen before, but they're having a major ramification on global cotton use. You can see this illustrated in this chart, which is shows that a lot of us, it's not just China, though. China blows this chart out of proportion, but India, other places, is having its own problem. A lot of Indian capacity is sitting idle right now. So as you can look at ICE futures, you can see what they've done. Now, one bit of, I guess, positive news here to come out of this morning, you can say, for all the bad news in the world, there is, at least it seems like right now, the cotton prices on the futures level have bottomed. Part of this related to one thing is, if you look back in November, most of it, that's recent enough, we can all remember that in November we had a lot of bad news. And cotton prices went below 40 cents in March futures in the first part of November, and then tested that in the second part of November. And as they did that, I'll never forget the day that second test occurred, because it looked like the world as we knew it were coming to an end. By that time, we had all this economic calamity going on that we've heard everybody talk about, that as far as the bad news. It looked like every bank was going to go out of business. I think that as we went into that weekend, there was a run on Morgan Stanley that was only saved at the last minute by the government intervening. And then the Japanese investment and so forth. You had all that happening. At the same time, you had rumors circulating that the largest Chinese mill in China was going to go bankrupt. You had rumors circulating that over, you know, almost a half a million tons of cotton was being laid down between Pakistan, China, and other mills. That means contracts not being honored. And then you had Will Brothers announce they were going to go out of business after being in business since the Civil War. So if you'd have taken a pulse of the industry at that exact moment in time, the last time we dropped below 40 cents in March, you would say, it's over. I can't handle this anymore. The world's ending as we know it. Well, as you know, that did not happen. Things have actually improved since that moment in time. The Chinese mill did not go bankrupt. Those rumors were false. They are actually making small profits, but are making money. The Chinese did not lay down on that same volume of cotton, and shipments have actually picked back up a little bit to Pakistan. So the world has not evolved. The cotton prices have begun to rally. And the second thing that has happened during this moment in time is four major government efforts are underway to support prices, which has never happened before in the history of the cotton industry. First, we have our U.S. government loan program, which is supporting prices. Secondly, though, is we have the Chinese government program. China has a China National Cotton Reserve Corp that it sets in reserve, and it buys cotton when prices, the government believes prices are too low, sells cotton when prices are too high, and its job is basically to have it in every commodity to stabilize price. Well, this year, as prices begin to collapse, the Chinese farmer this year has been devastated by cotton. Last year he received, now this is going to be a little different to you, but you can add the percentages in your head. He gets paid yuan per kilogram for his cotton, seed cotton. He brings it into the gin. Well, last year he averaged 6 yuan a kilogram for his cotton. So he's very excited about planting cotton this year. It looked like a very profitable crop. They've done a real good job with yields improving, technology, government aid at the provincial level with helping him learn how to plant better and so forth. We expected he'd get 7 yuan a ton this year, 7 yuan a kilogram this year. Well, that did not happen. With the demand falling out of bed and so forth in China, the average price this year has ranged from as low as 4.5 to a high of 5.2, and that's only happened recently. So this caused some general panic among how do you stabilize the price of cotton in China. Well, they do not have direct government loans for the farmers and so forth like we do here. They only have the Reserve Corp. And the Reserve Corp made the decision, too, that for the last several years they've had a ginning modernization program put in place in which they want to promote modern gins, that is, gins that produce the same size bales as ours do here, typical 480 to 500-pound bale. They want it to be HVI classed and so forth. So they've had a program in place for that to happen. Well, they said that they would buy cotton in the open marketplace, substantially above the market, but they'd only buy the modern size bales, produced HVI class and produced by the gins. So they set off on this program to do that. They bought a couple hundred thousand tons. That didn't work. They decided to buy 1 million tons, took the total up to 1.3, almost 1.3 million tons. That did not stabilize the price totally. It began to. Then they lost another 1.5 million. To put that all together, that's almost, over a third of the Chinese crop will eventually be bought by the state reserve and be held by the government until prices reach a level they want to release that back into the marketplace. Well, that has been a big driving force. The second driving force has been in India. Now, we all have had the tales of India over the past several years where India's had for many, many years something called the minimum support price. That has been in place, but it's really never been very effective. I was there in July, heard them talk about it. The one thing when you went out, I went out and had discussions with the Cotton Corporation of India, came away with, this time was going to be different, and it has been different, in which they have got the commitment from the government, which is going into an election, to spend the money to support the farmer. So what they did was substantially raise the minimum support price in India. They made the calculation based on what it costs to grow cotton in India and to offer a small profit. And so they raised the price higher than it's ever been before, the minimum support price. And this year they'll probably buy at least a third of the crop and goes into the Cotton Corporation in India, who buys it in seed cotton form, gins it, and then sells it to the domestic market and sells it for export. But they're in no rush to do so. They've been well financed by the government, and that's acted to support the Indian cotton price this year, unlike previous seasons. If we were to have a chart of the Indian cotton price up here before you, you see last year at this particular time when they had a record crop, the price went down to where they were the most competitive in the world. Today, they hadn't been the most competitive in the world. Actually, U.S. cotton has been more competitive than Indian cotton has been because of the way our marketing loan program works. So India has been supportive of cotton, China has been supportive of cotton, U.S. has had their support program, and then Pakistan was a lot more ineffective, late to the game, but they launched a program through their trading corporation of Pakistan, which they've been buying seed cotton. So all these factors together have helped the cotton market bottom and have put a floor under world prices that has helped stabilize it today. So it's all not doom and gloom from that standpoint. And here's interesting chart to leave you with this perspective about the index fund money. A lot of the index fund money that came into the cotton market, and I'm going to be going over a little bit, but that's, I told Gary, that's just the way it's going to be right now. But as far as index funds, just one thing to note, we've all cussed the index funds and said how bad they were and so forth, but it was more or less, in my opinion, more how it was regulated. They were the privatization of the commodity exchanges and so forth took away a lot of the regulation that's been in place since I've been in the business. The old New York Cotton Exchange, NYBOC Board of Trade used to work closely with the CFTC and regulate their flow in an orderly manner. The last administration, the Bush administration, that went out the window with more of the deregulation, the privatization of the exchanges and so forth. So the forces were left to run on their own, run amok. And that caused some of the disruptions we had. But you can see what happens to prices when the index funds move out of the market. For everybody who sells, there got to be somebody to buy it. And when they're not there, we have a real suffer from a liquidity in the markets. And this shows a direct correlation between the index fund position and prices to some degree. And now as we get into new crop around the world, you can see right here is a chart of soybeans, corn, and cotton. And it's indexed to putting it at the first end of 2007. Gary, being an economist, did this chart and indexed them to 100. So if you think everything, if you priced everything at 100 at the beginning of 2008 to where it is today, you can see how much better soybeans and corn have done than cotton. So it doesn't take much to figure out that that's going to cause U.S. acres to drop. How much is going to drop? We're not trying to put an exact number on it today. There's a lot of, with soybean prices right now rallying up to 1030, was yesterday over 1030 for November beans and so forth. There's a moving target, but obviously cotton acres will be down, pulling production down with it. Now, one thing that to take a little note here, and this is the last slide, so I'm going to say something in addition to, without providing a slide for it, is as we look out for acreage prospects around the world, the most encouraging thing you can take a note of is cotton acreage will be down sharply in China this next year. Because of what I told you just earlier, the poor returns, some of the Chinese farmers in some areas actually rent land from their fellow farmers and kind of develop a little scale process. Those farmers who did that this year face a loss. They lost money on cotton. You can imagine how dramatic that is because they had to pay land rent and extra labor and so forth. And so for others, they've been a sharply loss of income. So a survey done by the National Cotton Marketing Monitoring Service, who's our joint venture partner, it shows that acres next year will be down 17%. And that's a big drop. At the same time that's happening, the cotton's going into the reserve, so you're going to have a dramatic supply tightening in China over the next 12 months. So there is some encouraging news to take from there. India will probably remain the cotton king for the moment because the government support program, the growers will grow cotton and plant cotton. other places in the world, acres will be down in Uzbekistan, Central Asia for water reasons. So things will be tightened up pretty dramatically as we move into the year. And to leave you on a positive note, it does appear because of the four government support programs that are now in place around the world, that cotton prices have bottomed. And at least they may not go anywhere too fast, but as we look into 2009, while the rest of the economy may not improve to 2010, cotton prices will at least, we've probably seen our lows for right now. Thank you. I didn't even go over.
Certainly my thanks to the three panelists. We have about 10 or 15 minutes if anyone would like to ask any questions of the panelists. Now would be the time. Did I see a hand?
You're not allowed to ask it.
Actually, one question, if I start things off, I'll turn this one to Bob. You talked about the potential, given the big increase in money supply, the low rates, effectively 0% rates by the Fed now, that was inherently inflationary well into 2009. Do you see that beginning on the commodity side, or do you see that spreading more broadly across the broader economy all at once?
I think you'd have to think that was more broad-based. That it, you know, I don't know that it necessarily started. You could see it start in the energy side as you get the cutbacks in production. You know, coming out of OPEC, you get a little bit of a demand growth begin to show up in the United States and around the world, China again, et cetera, as their stimulus package kicks in. You know, I think you could begin to see it show up in the energy side as one area where it would show up. But I think it's more broad-based than that. Again, it's just such a dump of money in the system so quickly.
You know, I think of, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce that word. Jeez, I think that as you think about where it, how it might affect inflation, that it does end up probably showing up first, possibly in the energy markets. We have had a substantial reduction in production announced by OPEC that I think is beginning to actually bite. And, you know, short-term futures markets being what they are, you know, look out at some of the longer delivery months and beginning to show up there as well. But I do think it does end up being a broad-based effect, again, almost like the stagflation that we had back in years past. I don't know if the economy as a whole necessarily is growing that fast, but that, again, just that slug of additional money just does end up kind of kicking the inflation factors back in place. I think the Fed is going to do everything they can to make sure we do not get into a deflationary environment.
Anyone else in the audience have any questions they'd like? John.
Do you think that scenario is going to entice, you know, stagflation and inflation going on? Could that entice investment funds? I assume some have lost money, some have gone, but the ones that are sitting there with a bunch of money to come back into commodities.
I think there's a very definite possibility of that there, you know, there is beginning. I think Ed's already talked about, you know, I've already begun to see some of those monies, some of those funds decide to kind of, you know, get their feet back in the water, and it does end up being, again, that's so much money potential there relative to the markets that it can almost create its, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. I think the question becomes, you know, how many times do they have to get burned before they decide to not play? And so far, anyway, it looks like they are beginning to think about coming back into the system.
But, Ed, you want to say
something? Oh, well, I mean, my voice is pretty big and loud anyway, so I'd say yes, they're coming back. They're not all dead anyway. I mean, there's a large section of funds that are trade long and short, and the index fund is only one component. So I would think, yes, there's definitely a shot of that. If you look at the commodity CRB index, it's far above my pay grade to make a call on the whole global commodities market. But I would say that you've got a chance that you've bottomed the global commodity market already, and you're now beginning this climb upward. And how fast it accelerates and so forth is how fast, you know, either inflation or just you know, a little bit of trickle improvement in demand from China. I mean, Goldman Sachs did a forecast, and in the 2009 forecast by Goldman Sachs was probably one of the best. They forecast global growth at only 0.6%. But out of that global growth, 4.7% of it was in the BRICS country, Brazil, and Russia, India, and China. Russia's obviously in a recession, so Brazil, India, and China. So the importance of those markets, if you see a stabilization in China and an improvement in demand for the raw materials in China, I think a lot of money will come back in the commodity market very quickly. Because if you think about where it's going to move, the equity markets may not offer the returns for a long period of time, whereas commodities do.
Further questions? Carol, please.
Well, I think what it means is you're not going to have the big upward surge. There's not going to don't contemplate that the price is the bottom. They're probably not going to just soar to the upside as well either, because China, I think, will make a coherent policy. Right now, the average price they acquired their stocks at has been 12,600 yuan a ton. To put that in perspective for you, the current market went to a low of about 10,000 yuan a ton. It's now 10,900 yuan a ton. So we've come back up about 900 yuan a ton from the lows. If it rallies past 12,600 yuan a ton, which I'd have to do the calculation, and then you got the differences in the world market, spot market. But let's say, 60 cents or so, New York futures around that area. As it gets much above that, then you got an issue of what point China. China will release it. India will release it much quicker than China, because the Indian situation, it's not a reserve program. It is just a support price in which they bought it from the farmer, and they don't care what, and even if they're going to start selling it back in the world market right here, and as prices go higher, they'll sell it as dramatically as they can to break even. Because their goal is just to stabilize the price of income for the farmer, not stabilize price in general, while China's goal is to stabilize prices. So Indian cotton will start moving to the market right now, even if today's marketplace at a loss to the government. And the China one will come in as the prices go higher. What it means is the prices cannot rally substantially, I think, in the short term.
Any further questions? Have one. I'll maybe throw out to all three panelists. With the new administration due to come in here just a matter of a few days, of course, a new Secretary of Agriculture, a new chief at the CFTC. What do you expect to see both in terms of policy changes at both organizations?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the most important of all that is that as far as the new Secretary of Agriculture is he's known right now for being, from an area that supports ethanol and the biofuel projects. He's obviously going to be looking at something beside ethanol. But if the ethanol mandate remains in place or is expanded over the next several years, that has major ramifications for the cotton industry. Because if you look into 2009-10, if you take F.C. Stone's grain group, which does some pretty excellent work in this area, if you take their forecast, there's going to be a tremendous amount of acreage increasing and needed in soybean and corn acreage for 2009-10 with the mandate remaining in place. So the fact that if you were to look at the candidates of Obama and McCain, Obama was known definitely as a pro-ethanol candidate. He's got a Secretary of Agriculture who's kind of leans in pro-ethanol. So if I was to take that stance, I think that's the single most important thing happening. As far as the CFTC, yeah, they're going to be tougher, and they should be tougher. They can't be any worse than what we've had. So that's not going to be the big market driver. The other one's going to be the Secretary, I think, the market.
Mark,
yeah,
sort of making any comments?
I just suggest that the new Secretary is from Iowa, so I wouldn't look for a great deal of change in motivation for change in existing policy. Perhaps a little bit more concern over what might happen to some of Grassley's ideas. They might give a little larger voice than they have in the past.
I think I would second where Mickey is coming from on that point. I do think that the kind of basic policy structure that we've got in place for commodity policy probably doesn't change all that much. I don't see that there's a big push on that front, but I do think that where you do end up with changes, I think because, and when you listen to some of the rhetoric that's coming out of the Obama team already, you know, yes, we need to go off and spend all this money to prime the pump, and we probably do need to go off and spend all this money to prime the pump to get the economy going. But on the other hand, they're also saying that we need to be observant of the deficit, we need to watch the budget, we need to not just go out and be propagating our spending, we need to do spending cuts as well. And I think the one that you've kind of heard pop up more than once is this notion of reducing direct payments to producers. Whether they do that with tighter payment limits, whether they do that with the definition of you've got to be able to prove 1,000 hours of, you know, in order to be actively engaged. I don't know what the mechanism is, but I just would suspect that that ends up being something that gets a lot more discussion even early this year. I probably would be more concerned about changes that may come out of the environmental side. With Carol Browner as the kind of the climate and environment czar, as well as new folks at EPA, I just think that you're going to get more, you're probably going to be affected more in what you do by those changes than the changes that you get in commodity policy. And cotton, because of your reliance on the payments and the structures that you have and just the way the payments work for cotton producers, probably ends up being one of the most affected commodities on the payment limit side as well. More good news. Sorry.
We have just a moment more. Any further questions? Sir.
Yeah, you mentioned that prediction of the drop, it was correct, and the large rebound in energy price. What was his key point about what might cause that big rebound?
Well, this analyst was more of a long-term statistician and technician than he was fundamentalist. As far as any other fundamentals that were discussed at that meeting, it was basically that there's not very much. I mean, if you looked at the growth in oil production worldwide, I mean, this is not my area of expertise, but I'm going to give it to you the best I can remember. Was oil production worldwide is not going to be, it's not growing very rapidly anyway. At the best, it's growing like 1% or something per year. And if you have any return to demand growth that you had before the last 6 months, then obviously we're going to run out of the traditional fossil fuels very rapidly. So a lot of that's related to, you know, return to robust demand in the BRIC countries, where, I mean, India imports 100% of their energy, China's a net importer, Russia's the only exporter of that region, and Brazil's self-sufficient in ethanol and so forth. But it was driven by just a simple, I mean, what I remember, more technical warming forecast, and secondly, based on the basic lack of growth in supply versus the lack of projected growth in demand.
And with that, I think we're officially out of time. Certainly, I want to express my gratitude to the panelists and my thanks to the council for hosting this. Mark, thank you very much.